Hi, this is Alex Gonsalves of TukiScout.com, and this is the Seller Sound Podcast.
Simoes bending one for Torres. Eusebio. Oh, my word! Have you ever seen anything like that?
Bem jogado por Simão. A passar por dois adversários, Simão. A tentar obter o golo, Figo. E a bola, golo! O golo de Figo!
Rui Costa vai, Rui Costa vai, acreditou. Vai tirar para o golo. Atira o golo! Golo!
From the Slesson Podcast Studios, we welcome you to episode 32 of the Slesson Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode here as we have reached the end of the 2019-2020 league and club campaigns in Portugal, culminating with Porto getting the Dobradinha, securing the Taça de Portugal this past Saturday in Coimbra, beating Benfica 2-1. This comes obviously after Os Dragões won their second Liga NOS title in the last three seasons under manager Sérgio Conceição. So it was quite the season for Porto. Quite the season, actually, for many, if not all, the clubs, if you take into account the pandemic. But a great season in Liga NOS for clubs like Porto and Braga, Rio Ave and Famalicão. Not so great were the seasons for storied clubs like Benfica and Sporting. And to discuss all of that with us on episode 32 is Alex Gonçalves from TugaScout.com. Really enjoyed our conversation as we looked back at the season and we get his insight on Porto, Benfica, Braga, and Sporting, as well as what he thinks are next for these clubs coming up in the 2021 campaign, which is just about to start next month. As soon as this season started or ended, I should say, here in early August, it is going to be going again and getting going again in September. Before you know it, we will get to the interview with Alex in just a moment, but let's first remind you of all the ways you can stay connected and share our podcast with everyone around the world. First and foremost, our website, SlessonPod.com. You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at SlessonPod. Like and share our Facebook page, Facebook.com/SlessonPod. And you can always email the show, SlessonPod@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel with not a lot of content on it right now, but I am working on rectifying that and hopefully soon, hopefully as soon as next month when the Slesson is back in action in Nations League group play. And let me tell you something, guys. You don't know what you miss until it's gone. We've heard that saying over and over again for in various stages in our lives. It's been since November since we have seen the Slesson on the field. And it didn't hit me until the Taça de Portugal final, knowing that we were in August and knowing that the Slesson will be playing in September. And it is such a great feeling that we'll be able to get Slesson football back on the field, hopefully as safely as possible and as high a quality as possible, as the Slesson vies to become not only the inaugural winners, as we already are, but let's go back-to-back and be the only winners of the Nations League since it's been in existence. But group play starts next month as we open up against Croatia. We'll have a lot more on that in the coming episodes later on this month and in early September. But I'm just looking forward to Slesson football again. And getting to see our beloved Slesson de Esquinas back on the field and with that beautiful crest on their chest. But going back to YouTube, we'll have YouTube up and going here hopefully soon. Search the Slesson Podcast on YouTube and please subscribe to us there. Of course, you can download, listen, and subscribe to our show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or any other podcasting platform you are using. And if you're feeling generous on Apple Podcasts, if you drop us a nice review and a rating of 5 Estrellas, we would greatly appreciate your support. Okay, so we've got that all squared away. It is now time to get to our review of the 2019-2020 Liga NOS season right here on episode number 32 of the Selecion Podcast with Alex Gonsalves of TugaScout.com. So let's begin episode number 32 with our guest. He is a member of the media who is covering Portuguese soccer through TugaScout.com. You can find his account for TugaScout at TugaScoutPT. Of course, we are talking with Alex Gonsalves. You can follow Alex on his personal account as well, at Al Jeeves. That's A-L-J-E-E-V-E-S. We've been trying to track him down for some time to get him on the podcast, and we finally made our schedules work. Alex, it's Danny Pinto here from the States. How you doing?
Hi, Danny. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm very well, thanks. Hope you are too. And yeah, it's great to finally be able to connect and get the chance to come on the podcast. Look forward to it.
You know, we're gonna have you on here to discuss the 2019-2020 season, but this past weekend we just had the Taça de Portugal final between Porto and Benfica. Of course, Porto winning the double with a 2-1 victory over Benfica. The majority of that match, Porto was down to 10 men. I'm not sure if the football was as ugly as the field or vice versa, but what did you make of the final game of the 2019-2020 season?
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting match, I thought, in many ways. You know, it maybe didn't live up to the expectations. There weren't too many clear-cut chances, but I don't think anyone can have too many complaints about the results in the end. You know, Porto were well in the game, both before and after the red cards. You know, Diaz got sent off, of course, Conceição too. And really, Benfica didn't have too many clear-cut opportunities. You couldn't really tell that Benfica had the man advantage in the second half. Porto obviously had to take up a more defensive approach than they would have planned for, but Benfica offered little going forward, and Porto did what they had to do. You know, they made the most of the set-piece situations that they were afforded. And, you know, I have to say it was a surprise to me that Porto did manage to go 2-0 up, considering the adversity they faced. But they just didn't seem fazed, and still had full belief that they could get the job done. And at that point, you know, against 10 men, 2-0 down, any side is going to struggle to get back into the game. And you know, Porto were quite happy to continue with a more defensive approach. And their excellent resilience and work rate paid off. They really limited Benfica. You know, you had a couple of half chances with Vinicius headers, but you know, other than Jota hitting the post with a well struck volley, before that there wasn't really a lot to say about Benfica's attacking endeavour. And the penalty I thought was soft as well. That gave them a way back into the game later on, but I thought that was a fortuitous penalty, to say the least. So worthy champions, Porto, and really impressive achievement to complete the double.
You know, we'll begin our review of the season with the champions of both the Taça de Portugal and Liga NOS, and of course, Porto overcame a 7-point lead from Benfica. How much credit does Sérgio Conceição deserve here for what he was able to do with this team, given that earlier in the season he was almost out the door? You know, wanting to quit, not on the same page with a lot of his players, not on the same page with the president. But how much credit does he deserve for not only turning this around, but, you know, positioning himself for however long of a run he would like at the Estádio do Dragão?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a really good point, because, of course, earlier on in the season, there was a lot of questions about Conceição. You know, fans were getting impatient. I'm not sure if it was the majority, but certainly many were questioning him. Yeah, there seemed to be falling outs between certain players. It didn't look good, and Benfica were cruising to the title, it seemed. You know, they such a huge advantage, a historic turnaround for Porto to catch them. They deserve so much credit. Conceição has done an amazing job with this team, because I don't think it's comparable to teams of the past, or Porto teams of the past. at the same time, we do have to remember, you know, of course, Porto earned the title, but ultimately this was very much a case of Benfica also throwing it away in startling fashion. I don't want to take anything away from Porto because over the course of the season, the most consistent team wins. And that was ultimately Porto in the end, which is surprising considering the start that Benfica made. You know, first half of the season, Benfica were incredibly consistent. They knew how to grind out results in the first half of the season, even if they weren't playing as well as you'd expect. Over the first 19 or so games, they were unstoppable. Looked like it could be a record-breaking season. But they capitulated in historic fashion, and they opened the door for Porto. And credit to them, they took full advantage of it. You also have to remember that, of course, Porto beat Benfica on each of the three occasions they faced them, which is an impressive achievement in itself and made them more than worthy winners, really. You know, they won their three biggest domestic games of the season. Of course, a lot of credit has to go to Conceição for that, because that's a massive achievement to beat Benfica home and away in the league and then in the cup final. So, yeah, he's one of the top Portuguese managers in the world, I think. I don't think he gets quite enough credit, because this isn't an amazing Porto team. There are some, you know, very good individual players there, but what he's done there, yeah, it's impressive, because I don't think anyone really would have tipped them to win the league either at the start of the season. Benfica were clear favourites in many people's eyes.
You know, he now has won two league titles in the last three seasons, adding now the Taça de Portugal. Where do you think he ranks in terms of just Porto managers over the last, let's say, since José Mourinho, there's been managers that have won multiple titles at Porto, but where do you kind of find him right now in the echelon since José Mourinho left 15, 20 years ago almost?
You know what, he's pushing it close, isn't he, to the very top. I mean, you'd say that probably André Villas-Boas is still ahead of him purely because of what he did in Europe, which I would say is the one thing you could say Conceição's not managed to match. Then again, in the Champions League, over the two of the last three seasons, he did a good job. You know, he was knocked out by Liverpool in the end, which is no shame at all. But I'd say this season, what let them down was ultimately their Europa League showing. And of course, Villas-Boas, he went on to win that in the All-Portuguese final, of course, against Braga. So I would say that's the only thing that really would hold him back from being as high up as Villas-Boas. But again, what you have to say is that he's done it over a few seasons now. You know, it's the consistency. And the fact that he's now won a cup as well, because he was getting to finals of cup competitions, but not managing to get the job done. So adding the Portuguese Cup to his cabinet as well, yeah, he's right up there, I have to say. He's Villas-Boas probably number one still since Mourinho, but yeah, probably number two, Conceição.
We're talking with Alex Gonçalves of TugaScout.com. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Al Jeeves. That's A-L-J-E-E-V-E-S. You can also follow Tuga Scout on Twitter as well. Tuga Scout, at Tuga Scout PT. You're listening to episode number 32 of the Seleção Podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Staying with Porto for just a few more minutes here, what do you think was the turnaround point for the season for Porto and for Sérgio Conceição?
Well, again, I do think that obviously Benfica's slip-ups were crucial. In any normal season, Benfica would have gone on to win the league quite easily. And of course, even when Benfica did slip up, you saw that Porto was still dropping points. You know, I remember that 0-0 draw with Av, which was just unthinkable before the game kicked off. You just did not see that coming. So I guess after that, though, they were getting the job done. You know, they were very consistent. It seemed that they turned the corner maybe after that match. But even at that point, it looked like Benfica could still win it if they just, you know, their defeats to Marítimo and Santa Clara was really what then just gave Porto all the initiative. So I'd say it was Benfica that really played a massive role in allowing Porto to complete the turn. But of course, then once they won the league, they looked really good. That Moreirense match where they won 6-1 was delightful to watch. They played some great football. And, you know, it shows what they can do. Maybe they just needed there was just a little bit too much pressure on both teams in the end, because when they played with that freedom, they were playing some great stuff. That goal they scored, I think it was the fifth goal, was magnificent. And it's an exciting time for Porto, really, because they've got a lot of youngsters coming through as well. It's difficult to pinpoint, I think, the exact moment that they managed to flip the switch, but I think the Avs match kind of woke them up a bit, because to draw 0-0 against Avs was fair play to Avs, was amazing, but ultimately a huge disappointment for Porto, and after that they seemed to finally kick it up a gear.
You know, in terms of points and in terms of logistics, I thought the match at Dragão that kept Benfica from expanding their lead or even keeping it at 7 points was huge. It then became a 4-point deficit, which then turned into a 1-point deficit, which turned into the lead. You know, early on in the second part of the season, and Porto never really looked back, but. It's a credit to them to know and to show up when needed, which was something that Benfica failed to do in the second half. The one thing I'd like to know from you is there's one of the prevailing storylines of this season, whether it was with Porto winning the title or finishing in second or third or whatever. There's been some financial. Ramifications kind of coming from this season that were going to happen no matter what happened in the season, which is some of the players that were key contributors to this title run, like Alex Telles, they know that they are not going to be bringing him back. His contract is done, and he's reportedly off to bigger and better things in Europe. But who do you think is likely to be sold or not renewed this summer in Porto's defense of their Liga NOS title?
I think Danilo Pereira, I think he'll be off this summer. You know, he's got a lot of suitors in the Premier League. I'd be surprised if he was still there. You know, there's been murmurings throughout the season that this would be his last campaign, and that would be a massive loss, I think. You know, Otávio, he could be off as well. He's into his last year of contract. You know, you've got Marega, you've got Tiquinho Soares. Their front three, I think, all three of their strikers, their main strikers, are into their last year of contract as well. So it is going to be a pretty hectic summer. Another one of transition, really. You know, this season was actually something of a transition. You know, you saw them lose some really key players. Their captain as well, and they came back though. They managed to win the league. So I would say that despite this adversity, they're going to be right up there. They're going to be challenging again. And I think the fact they've got these youngsters that are slowly being integrated into the team should make that transition a little bit easier. But yeah, they're going to lose Danilo, it looks like, and probably a couple more.
And you mentioned the young players, youngsters like Fabio Silva and Fabio Vieira, Dio Costa, who started in goal in the Taça final, and Diogo Leite, the 21-year-old center back, among others from that group of Ovilal, who were so successful coming up as youngsters. Of those four and others, who do you see kind of stepping up into that next role as contributors as soon as next season?
I would say Fabio Vieira, you can't really look beyond. He was played the most, I would say, towards the end of the season, and he looks like he's already well within the first team squad. I'd like to see Fabio Silva. I think he'll probably step up if they do lose one or two of the strikers that they have on their books. Hopefully he gets a chance anyway. He's a huge prospect. I really like Romário Barro, actually. I think that, you know, maybe there was a bit of a falling out with Conceição, but he's got great attributes for a midfielder. You know, he can play pretty much in any position in that midfield. Hopefully he gets more of a chance next season, because I think he's going to be a star as well. Yeah, there's a lot of encouragement. I think Diogo Leite may be off, which would be unfortunate to see. If he does go, that would be I think a bit of a mistake for Porto, because ultimately, you know, obviously there's Pep who's getting on, you know, maybe this might be his last season coming up. So it would be good to see them keep him, but ultimately if he moves on, I'm sure he'll be successful wherever he ends up. It's going to be a season of transition for Porto, but I think they'll get through it because of that, you know, wonderful class that won the UEFA Youth League not too long ago.
And I mispronounced it's Olival, not Ovilau. So all you Porto fans, I'm very sorry. I apologize. I'm trying to read as best I can here from my notes, but that group though, if they can come together in the Liga NOS setting. And of course, the Liga NOS in terms of business, it thrives on making money off of its youngest stars, and you know, the continuity of this Porto team for the next few years will be predicated on finances and what other teams in the leagues in Europe value their players at. But it'll be interesting to see, and it does seem that Porto is in good hands. For the next few seasons, that is for sure. Let's go to their opponent from the Taça de Portugal final, which was obviously Benfica. As we are recording, this on Monday, August the 3rd. Benfica is set to officially announce and unveil JJ, Jorge Jesus, as their next manager following Alex. Just a... In terms of a Jekyll and Hyde kind of season, this was that. I mean, if there was ever a 2020 example of a football season, I guess it would be this Benfica season. Started off so well with Bruno Lage, obviously coming off of the tremendous finish they had with Bruno Lage at the end of last season. But how would you summarize and characterize this season for Benfica?
Disastrous, really, wasn't it? I mean, it has to be said, it was a season to be forgotten, but probably won't be forgotten because of how much of a capitulation it was in the end. As you said, it was so promising to begin with. You know, the way they ended last season, the phenomenal start they made in this one, it was unthinkable that this could happen. You know, Lage was looking like a miracle worker. Benfica were cruising to the title. But, you know, the cracks were there to see. The winning in the league, it started to become more and more challenging. You know, they were still winning, but it wasn't as convincing as it was at the end of last season. That loss to Porto on I think it was the second or third day of the season, that was probably another warning sign. This is the story of Benfica probably over the last couple of seasons, maybe more, that they're very good generally, well, before the end of this season, of course, but they're very good generally against the teams they're expected to beat. But when it comes to a team that's of the same standard as them or better, they just struggle. And that's, I think, why they've struggled in Europe recently. And the fact that they lost three times against Porto this season kind of sums that up. They were failing miserably in Europe, just about squeezing into the Europa League this season by coming third in what was an average group for the Champions League, really. And then they were dispatched by Shakhtar. So it all just capitulated from there. They needed something significant to change, and they've turned to Jorge Jesus.
You know, it's funny because I thought when they, you know, the name started coming out, you know, Pochettino and Unai Emery and then JJ's name came about, and I'm like, there's got to be like a 1% chance that Jorge Jesus comes back. how everything ended the first go around with the club and him, but what does it say about Luis Felipe Vieira's personal feeling of his footing as president of the club with the elections coming up in October?
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. I mean, it was quite incredible that he came back. It's startling in many ways. You know, it didn't look like it was ever going to be a possibility while Luis Felipe Vieira was still the president. But it's an election year. You know, it is an election year. And personally, I do think that Jorge Jesus was the best possible appointment for Benfica, really. You know, there was talk of Pochettino, as you say, but that was always in the realms of fantasy, let's be honest.
It was a pipe dream, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been ideal, of course. But no, he was going to be going to a stronger league. And for Benfica right now, there's no way they could have attracted a better manager than JJ. And of course, it's incredibly controversial, particularly the fact that, you know, Luis Filipe Vieira is still the president. This didn't think like it could ever happen while he was still there. The way he left the first time around, you know, and a minority of fans, I think, will have incredible and serious reservations about this. But I think that this is exactly the appointment Benfica needed, really. This is controversial and highly debatable, but, you know, you could definitely make a case that he's the best Portuguese manager in the world right now. You know, there are some serious contenders for that. Nuno at Wolves is doing an amazing job. Mourinho, of course, Fonseca, even, you know, Fernando Santos, Conceição. But you look back at what he did at Benfica the first time and their slow decline since he left, you know, particularly in Europe, it makes his achievements even more impressive in hindsight, I think. And then, of course, what he did at Sporting, he got them so close to the title. And then to round it off, the success he's had in South America with Flamengo. He's unproven in a top league, of course, but, you know, I've got no doubt that he'd have had success, had the opportunity to manage in England or Spain or elsewhere come around. You know, he's incredibly experienced. So I think he's going to be successful. And again, because it's an election year, it seems he'll be backed in the market, you know. And you know, it's not an appointment that's going to bring about long-term success. I think we can agree. You know, this is 3 years, maybe 3 or 4 years maximum, I would say. But he can help Benfica become a force, potentially not only in Portugal, but in Europe again. Not like, you know, challenging for the Champions League, but certainly being very competitive in the Europa League in the short term. But again, yeah, Luis Filipe Vieira got desperate, it seems, because I don't think that he would have ever thought of bringing in Jorge Jesus in any other circumstance than this, which kind of shows the state of Benfica right now.
You're listening to episode number 32 of the Seleção podcast. I'm your host, Danny Pinto. We are joined by Alex Gonçalves of TugaScout.com. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Al Jeeves. That's AljeeVes. And of course, you can follow the Tuga Scout account as well at Tuga Scout PT. One more thing about Benfica, and we'll move on to Braga next. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, there are rumors that they're going to try to open up the purse strings a little bit this summer with a win now mentality for the next couple of years, is however long Jorge Jesus is there. What are you hearing on the Cavani front, and what are you hearing on the reported, you know, 100 million that is supposedly supposed to be available for spending this summer?
I think Cavani, I mean, I just can't see it. It's not feasible. Of course, Benfica could afford it because he'll come with no signing fee, of course. You know, we won't have to pay anything to see him come to Portugal, of course. But it's a dream, isn't it? Let's be honest. I think that he'll. What I last heard was potentially Roma, but I see like a 5% chance of Cavani ending up at Benfica. It would be amazing for the league to see that happen. You know, what a prestigious signing that would be. It would be like even bigger than when Porto managed to bring in Iker Casillas. But yeah, that I just don't think that's going to happen. In terms of the funding, I think it will be there. 100 million would be a lot. I don't know if it'll be that high. But again, we could see plenty of players leave this summer as well if there are clubs out there willing to sign, which of course their stock is lower than it would have been this time last year, for example. But if a club's willing to pay the release clause of Ruben Dias or Carlos Vinicius, then I can definitely see that money being reinvested in the squad rather than as we've seen in the past, it kind of just been kept in the management upstairs and not really reinvested in the squad as we'd like to see from all the clubs in Portugal. So I think he'll be backed in the market. Whether it'll be 100 million, we'll see. But certainly, I think we can expect an interesting summer on the transfer front at Benfica.
We now turn our attention to, this is my personal opinion, and Alex, you have a better grasp of the league than I do, but is there anyone who doesn't like Braga or has any ill will towards Braga? I've never met anyone who said, oh my God, Braga, you know, I can't wait to beat them. They must be like the nicest quality team in the league by far.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, I mean,
like, I openly root for them if it does not impact Benfica whatsoever. And you know, as a Benfiquista, you know, I don't root for anybody else, but I like seeing, you know, I like seeing their success. I love their stadium. The Quarry is it can be an absolute fortress. But
absolutely.
But I mean, it just the way they've conducted business this season specifically, and you know, and they've been a top four team. The last, you know, 5-6 years, you can make the case, you know, that they are arguing to be, you know, to make a conversation of a top four in Portugal instead of the top three. That obviously has to come with a few more titles, you know, over the years.
Yeah.
They got the Liga, the Taça Liga title this year, but, in terms of roller coaster in a good way, this Braga season started with Sapinto as their manager. He gets fired in December. They started off, I think they were like 16th or 17th, near relegation in the first month and a half of the season. They then go to Ruben Amorim, who had zero coaching experience at this level. They get off to a great start with him. They then sell him, for all intents and purposes, to Sporting in March for $10 million. They sell Trincão for $30 million. They're in the process of perhaps selling Paulinho for another $30 million. They get a tremendous manager who knows the league and is Braga, you know, through and through in Carlos Carvalhal. There's a lot of right that is being done right now at Braga, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to hear that back, it's incredible how turbulent this season was, how chaotic it was, and yet so successful. I mean, I completely agree with what you say. Braga are many people's second favorite team in Portugal, if not their first, of course. But it's just, I think it's the fact that they are the underdogs. And you kind of lose sight of that because they have been so good for so long. But the financial discrepancies between them and the big three still exists. It's not as big as it was for sure in the past. But, you know, they had to work so hard to get to the point that they are at right now. And they look in as good a position as they've ever been, really. I mean, even with they've had now, I think it's six managers in the last year, which is crazy when you look back, including, you know, Abel, of course, who went to Pau. And yet they've done so well. And of course, this isn't the first season that they've done it. You know, it's been a decade long process that they've managed to compete properly with the big three. Never really challenging for the title, apart from maybe one or potentially two seasons over the course of the decade. But they're always up there, and as you say, bringing in Carlos Carvalhal is huge. They're in great hands going forward. Carlos Carvalhal proved at Rio Ave that he's a top manager. He's proved it in the past, and it's no wonder that he was inundated with offers after he left Rio Ave. And that Braga managed to get him is testament to their project, their ambition, which will have surely been what convinced Carvalhal to join in the first place. He'll bring entertaining football, as we saw at Rio Ave this season, huge experience, and should finally, hopefully, offer some stability to the club, at least for one season, you would think. Of course, he's a manager that does hop about quite a lot himself, but you'd like to think that he'll be there for the whole season if he's given the chance, and hopefully it all goes well for him because he deserves it. And they're making really good progress in the transfer market as well. Really shrewd business already. I think they brought in, of course, Al Muzrati is an excellent choice to replace Palhinha in defensive midfield. A player, of course, Carvalhal knows really well. He impressed last season, second half of last season. Nico Gaitan coming back to Portugal to play for Braga. That's a huge coup for them. He may be past his peak, but you know what a caliber of signing that is. And then, of course, you've got wildcards like Castro and Yuri Medeiros, who they've also brought in. So there's a real chance that they could be even more exciting next season than they were this season. And they're going all out for third in the league next season, top three, which of course next time around will come with the Champions League spot. So it's a big season for Braga. If they achieve that, who knows? Because there's financial, you know, there's a huge windfall coming their way if they do manage to make it to the group stage, that is. But I wouldn't bet against them because they're doing everything right.
You know, it's hard to compete in Liga NOS, you know, just financially in terms of, you know, against Porto and Benfica and Sporting. But can this team, and of course the transfer window just opened as of this recording, you know, today as of this recording, and there's likely more business to be done, but as they are currently situated now, you mentioned top three, could they make a run possibly for a league title? Do you think is the system there with Carlos Carvalhal coming in with, you know, with talent like Ricardo Horta and Galeno and bringing in some of these solid pieces that they've already done in this transfer window? And again, good business. They're both on freeze, Gaetan and Al Maserati. Can this team be a threat to the top three in this upcoming Liga NOS season?
I mean, you know what? I don't think there's been a better season for them to be able to really compete for that top spot. And it sounds crazy just to say, because, you know, the idea of finishing above one of the big three is a huge achievement for any side, including Braga, of course. To finish above two is quite extraordinary. To be able to finish above all three in the same season, that is a menacing proposition. It's so difficult. You know, you have to rely on all three having relatively disappointing seasons for that to happen. But you know what? The thing with Braga is they need to just win those games that they're expected to, because we know that they can cause upsets against the big three. We've seen that this season. They won five consecutive matches against the big three this season across all competitions, which was just unheard of. If they can now, because they had some really disappointing results this season, if they can win those games they're expected to, not draw them as they often do, but win those matches, then of course they are well within a shout. And they are as well placed as they've ever been before to do that. And of course, Porto are going through a transition. Sporting look all over the place still. And Benfica, who knows? They're a bit of a wild card. They could have a great season, but again, it's also a bit of a transition for them. And Braga look like they're going to keep most of their players, which is crucial. I'd say that's more important than any signings they do, is that they keep that core together, which I think they're going to do on the large part, and add those, as you say, those last few solid pieces. They can. Why not? The financial disparity is there, but the quality is absolutely not.
We're talking with Alex Gonsalves of TugaScout.com here on episode number 32 of the Seleção podcast. You know, Braga had multiple managers and found some success in this Liga NOS season. The next club we're going to talk about, one of the other piece of the big three that have had their struggles in recent history in Liga NOS. Of course, we're talking about Sporting. Sporting, actually, as we mentioned, they buy pretty much Ruben Amorim from Braga in March, and on the last day get tipped by Braga for third, and they fall to fourth in the league, and now have to qualify or in the qualifying stage now in the Europa League. This is a club, Alex, that has not won a league title since the beginning part of this millennium here. I believe it was 2001, 2002. Yeah, the 2001, 2002 season.
Yeah.
We're approaching 20 years. Benfica fans in the latter part of the 90s and the early part of the 2000s, they went, I think, maybe 9-10 years before they had a league title with Trapattoni leading the way. We're approaching two decades now with Sporting. What can you surmise as the current state of this storied club, and where do you think they are currently in rectifying that?
They've got a long way to go. I really think, you know, it doesn't feel like a club that has, they've already gone, as you say, nearly two decades without a league title, and they seem further away than they ever have. I mean, of course, they've had some shocking seasons between then, but they just don't seem to have made it any closer. They had that one amazing season with Jorge Jesus where they came so close to finally doing it, but they they're not in a good place. You know, I think they've got a good manager on their hands. Amorim proved at Braga that he knows what he's doing, but he's unproven. He's who knows if he's actually going to stick around, because you know he's already had he's been, you know, Casapia, at Braga B, then Braga, and then Sporting, and he didn't stay very long at any of them. If they keep hold of him for the long term, maybe they can build something over the years. But next year is not. They're not gonna be competing for the title. To be honest, finishing third would be progress for them. If they manage to actually finish above Braga, they could consider that pretty successful, a chance to qualify for the Champions League. But yeah, I don't see them closing the gap, particularly this season, because if anything, it looks like they may lose some of their key players, some of their youngsters potentially as well. And you see that the other three teams they're competing with all have hugely experienced managers now. They look like they're being backed in the market. You know, Porto have Champions League football, which will give financial backing, even if they do lose some players on the cheap, so they can strengthen. Yeah, I mean, I can't see them finishing top two. I think top three is going to be difficult, to be honest. I think Braga have a better team currently. So yeah, I think it's going to be another disappointing season for them. Maybe a couple of seasons if they don't get their act together. You know, start investing well, I think is the problem. You saw what they did last season, bringing in Jesse and Bolasie, two players which in the past you'd have gone, wow, that's huge for Sporting, but they're like, it's 7 years too late. So they've got to change their transfer policy, I think, to really have a chance of winning the title.
And the most consistent thing about Sporting over the last, I would say, 5-6 years has just been the inconsistency that management and those who are making the decisions at Sporting have been making. And you know, you look at just the season that coming into the season, I mean, they were not a factor in the league in terms of, you know, a title threat last season, but this is a club that won the Taça da Liga and the Taça de Portugal. Those are, you know, any of the big three are looking to win those titles as well. They seem to have there seem to be some cohesion with Marcel Kaiser coming off of last season, but then he gets let go at the beginning of the league this season. Seelig takes over. He is then let go, obviously, for Amorim. It's a revolving door in terms of management as well there. And as you mentioned, the player situation, and a friend of mine, Jimmy Enge, who we've had on the show before, a huge Sporting fan, the business side of Sporting has taken a bit of a hit in terms of, there are a lot of young players, and you know, you mentioned it a couple minutes ago. Sporting is still the mecca of academy, Portuguese academy players, given their history of who's gone through there: Figo, CR7, João Moutinho, Rui Patrício. So they're always going to be looked at in a positive light there with their young players. Giovanni Cabral, he's 22. He won the Player of the Month in June. Then you have players like Nuno Mendes, who, as of either yesterday or this morning, as we're recording, are reportedly getting interest from Real Madrid. You have Gelson Fernandes, who has not set foot, I don't think, for much of his career in Liga NOS, already getting offers and a offer rejected. To go to Arsenal. So the business is there to be made, but the criticism has been that the release clauses are very rarely met, and sometimes drastically not met. What do you think of the business side of how Sporting has conducted themselves in the last 5-6 years, and is there any kind of remedy for that in the near future?
Well, I mean, actually, one thing I would say for when Bruno de Carvalho was there was that they were actually selling players for a large fee. They were actually selling them probably above what their market value was at the time. So that was one thing that, to be fair, during his reign, he did really well. And I can see why there's now frustration from Sporting fans that they've seen him go and replaced Obviously, he had his shortcomings as well. There's too many really to talk about now. But on the business side, they were doing well with him as president. Since he's left, it's gone to pieces a little bit. I would say, you know, their signings have been below Sporting standards. They've been selling players for the cheap. And I would say one of the good things they did do this season was with Bruno Fernandes, because they did stick to their guns. You know, they didn't sell him in the summer because they didn't get the offer they wanted. In the end, you'd say he probably did go for less than he's worth, although it could be as high as 80 million euros, I believe, if he fulfills all his objectives. So I'd say that was one thing they actually did quite well. They actually managed to you know, get what they were looking for him. But other than that, the signings they've made and the other departures they've seen, they've not been great. They've not been great at all. And they've got to replace, well, they can't replace Bruno Fernandes, but they've got to reinvest that money as well as they can. If they reinvest that money well, then maybe they'll have a chance of actually having a successful season. But I just don't see it happening currently, because their movements in the market haven't been good. And as you say, their youngsters not only don't go for their release clause, but their release clauses are often quite low compared to as you see with Benfica, for example, where they slap on 120 million euros or 100 million euros for their star youngsters that are breaking into the first team. So there's a lot of mismanagement, I think, at the club. But if they reinvest that Bruno Fernandes money well, then that's the only way I see them closing the gap.
You know, it started the Amorim era, if you want to call it that, did start well. They were unbeaten in their first eight matches in the league, six wins, two draws. They did finish with a loss, a draw, and a loss in the last three matches. And, of course, those two losses coming to the bitter rivals, Porto and Benfica. Benfica on the last day of the season. But if they can somehow... And maybe, you know, the you know, with the pandemic impacting so many aspects of football in the last few months, primarily financially, there's going to be some sales and there's going to be some business done that maybe not under normal circumstances would be done because of the financial ramifications. But you saw the young talent come, as I mentioned, Cabral, he's 22. Nuno Mendes is 18. Eduardo Quaresma is 18. Thiago Tomás is 18. Goalkeeper Luiz Maximiliano is 21. Wendel's 22. Yep. And again, Joelson Fernandes, 18. There is young talent, and by no means would I ever be silly enough to compare that young talent coming out of the academy with the stars that have been fostered in the last 20, 25 years. But as you mentioned, if they can wisely use their financial windfall from the Bruno Fernandes sale and get these kids who played well under Amorim for the most part another season under their belt as a collective unit, will they win the league? Probably not. But I mean, they are a Champions League caliber team coming out of Ligue 1, and I want to make sure that is how I characterize it. But they should have every opportunity, if handled properly, to fight for a spot in Europe's biggest stage next season.
No, I agree with that. I do, and their team is incredibly young. I think that's what Amorim's done really well. He's come in and said, "Look, everyone's got a chance. It doesn't matter what your age is. You're gonna be able to play under me." And of course, it was before he arrived too. They had a lot of youngsters there that were being given an opportunity. But it's the management side, the above the manager, if you will, in terms of the transfer business, because you know, you hear that they're willing to listen to offers for Jovan Cabral for 20 million euros. You know, where if Benfica had a player like Cabral, they would not even consider selling him for 20 million. When you've got someone with that ceiling, you know, that potential, you would not sell him for 20 million. So if they do end up selling him for a fee in that region, then it kind of just summarizes where Sporting are at right now. It would be, it doesn't make sense to me to sell your star player for 20 million and probably not be able to replace him with that kind of money in today's market. You'd have to be really shrewd in the market, and Sporting just don't seem to have that in them right now. So if they do continue to sell their players for below the value that you'd like to see them go for, then they're going to struggle. But as you say, the core of the team is good. It's very young. And going forward, if they do keep the team together, which is the most important thing, if they keep the team, then for sure they can be successful. But I don't think next season is the year for that. Maybe in 2 to 3 years, you could see them start to close the gap on the top two again. But they still seem a long way off to me.
You know, let's end with two more topics here, and we'll call this the feel good and the not good of the Liga NOS season. Obviously, Famalicão out of nowhere, newly promoted, in first place for about a month, all the way through week seven, I believe. But you know, folks call it Jorge Mendes FC. call it whatever you want, but you know that project was so fascinating to see throughout the entire season. They were in the top three for, I would say, 2/3 of the year, and were battling for a top five position and a position in the Europa League until just the crazy finish they had in the final weekend. But how good a story and how fun was it to watch Famalicão this season?
Oh, stunning. Yeah, stunning season for Famalicão. What they did, such a young side as well. You know, you forget that because they played with such maturity. They played such entertaining, you know, no fear football. They got results against the big clubs, and the results against the likes of Porto and Sporting just really summarized how much they were the feel-good story of the season. I think they caught the eyes and minds of all Portuguese football fans, really. And that they came so close to qualifying for the Europa League in their first season back in the top flight is just miraculous, really. It of course, you know, there's that huge disappointment for them to miss out on Europa League football altogether after, you know, such a fantastic campaign, having been in the top five for the vast majority of the season. It was kind of disheartening. You've got to say credit to Rio Ave. You know, I actually think they'll have a better chance of being successful in Europe than Famalicão. But I know most neutrals were rooting for Famalicão. Their story was amazing. They just couldn't get the job done. I'm a little concerned for them next season, to be honest. You know, they had so many lone players that obviously will be leaving the season. Nehuen Perez, Diogo Gonçalves, Fabio Martins looks like he's going back and probably going to be sold somewhere. Rachic, Alex Santeas. There are many others as well that I've forgotten to mention. So they face a huge rebuilding process. Their association with Atletico Madrid, and as you say, Jorge Mendes, should mean that they are able to assemble an equally talented squad next season, but it's not guaranteed. You know, they've got a great manager as well. And if they do make good use of the loan market again, then they'll have a good campaign. But we'll see if they are able to do that, you know, particularly with such a short space of time between now and the start of the season, you know.
You know, the approach was something that we, you know, very rarely see work you don't have a lot of time to build continuity with so many players coming in from a promoted side, yet they made it work for the majority of the season. And I would say, no, they made it work for the season. You know, if you were to tell me that they finished sixth at the beginning of the year, you know, I think everyone who follows the game would have been like, wow, sixth from the promoted side like this. But how much do you think the approach would have changed in the upcoming season had they finished fifth and got that last qualifying spot for Europa League?
It's a good point, actually. It is, because it would have been interesting to see how the approach would have shifted, as you say, if they had managed to get Europa League. You know, the caliber of player probably would have increased. You know, you've got the Atletico Madrid owner obviously has a share in Famalicão, and if he saw that the project worked that well, that they actually managed to get into Europe at the first attempt, then maybe he would have been like, wow, okay, you know, we can actually build something really special here. So I think there'll have been a bit of a disappointment that they didn't manage to get it done. Maybe a bit of that enthusiasm may have dissipated a little bit. Hopefully not, you know, of course. But yeah, I think they probably would have again used the loan market, as they will this summer, it looks like, purely because, you know, financially it helps. It helps, of course, the young Atletico Madrid players to get the chance to play, you know, high level football week after week in a very good league, in the Portuguese league. You know, it's much better than playing in your under 21 division, for example, or the B teams in the second and third tier. years of Spanish football. So it's mutually beneficial, you know. And of course, George Mensch gets to put his players on a bigger stage to then maybe sell on later. So it's a win-win for everybody to make use of the loan market. I just hope that there's not too much disheartenment that they missed out. Hopefully, they again sign really high quality youngsters. And if they do, you know, maybe they'll push for the Europa League again next season.
So we go from that feel good story to a club that can't find their keys. And that is Avs. What a disaster ending for I mean they won the Taça de Portugal 2 years ago, Alex.
Absolutely.
And we're at a point with this club that they were at the bottom of the league the majority of the year. I think for a good 20 some odd weeks they were in last place throughout
Absolutely.
The entire season.
Yeah.
You then have stories coming out in the last few weeks that they don't know if they're even gonna field players or play the games because of financial issues. And then as the season officially came to an end, not only them, but Vitória Setúbal, due to financial and licensing issues, not only do they get demoted after not finishing in the top two, in the bottom two spots, but Setúbal and Avs get demoted to the third division of Portuguese football. It's one of these things where it's like it's such a black eye to the league that is just known around the world as a feeder league to everyone else. But when stuff like this happens, it's such a negative mark on the league, and it just it was almost a microcosm of how 2020 has gone. around the world, but the Avs story, and then with Setúbal, such a storied club too in Portugal, going down to the third.
Yeah.
Obviously, the both clubs will appeal, and I would assume, unless something drastic happens, that they will just be relegated to the one, just one down. But what are your thoughts on just the calamity at Avs and the ending to their season?
It's a tragic story, really, isn't it, for Avs? You know, just a devastating season for Avs. It was hugely upsetting for everyone to watch, really. I think they had one win from the first 12 or 13 games. You know, 3 points on the board out of 13 league games is just it clearly shows they were out of their depth. And you know, the fact they won the Portuguese Cup in 2018 it makes it look even more impressive now. It was an amazing achievement at the time, but looking back now, 2 years ago, how much things can change in just 2 years, you know? They were down after the first 10 or so games, but to then see it rounded off with such financial troubles, and to see the team completely decimated, really, by the end of the campaign, completely different from the team they lined. If you compare the team they lined up with in the first game week to the last, I don't think you'd see too many players that are still there. And then just rounded off by being launched down into the third tier of the domestic game. It's hard, you know, it's hard to accept. You have to feel for them and the fans who were so jubilant 2 years ago after that Portuguese Cup success. They'd actually done brilliantly in the top flight over the last couple of seasons. You know, they were maintaining themselves pretty reasonably. You know, they never looked at huge risk of going down. It was always a possibility, but they finished okay, pretty comfortable. But such a disaster in the end, and it seems harsh, really. You know, in a year with COVID-19, I don't know how much that impacted their finances, but you've got to think that it may have had a role, you know.
Oh, sure.
And to just throw them into the third division, you know, because of things that are ultimately out of their control, and for sure, of course, not their fault at all, it seems harsh. You know, you'd like to see a bit of leeway given, a bit of reasonable thinking, if that is a contributing factor, which I think we can safely assume is the case. But you know, hopefully they do okay with the appeal, maybe just relegation to the second division, as you say. I mean, we've seen things like this happen before with the likes of Gil Vicente and Boavista. Not the same situation, of course, but they've been reinstated to the top flight, having been you know, relegated to the third tier of Portuguese football. So maybe, who knows, in a few years' time we'll see Avs back. But right now it's a painful situation for them, and it does look a long way back to the top flight.
Alex, we can't thank you enough for joining us and giving us your thoughts on the just completed 2019-2020 Liga NOS season. We want to make sure that everyone gives you a follow on Twitter. That's at Al Jeeves, A-L-J-E-E-V-E-S, on Twitter. TugaScout.com on Twitter, at TugaScoutPT. But before we let you go, there is a book coming out here in, I think, in the fall. It looks like October the 5th. It's called Iberia Chronicles, A Brief History of Spanish and Portuguese Football. And you were one of 20 writers to be part of this collective project. Tell everyone who's listening here what the project is about and your role in the upcoming book.
Yeah, I mean that was really good fun. You know, great to be able to contribute to that. It was basically brought about by these two great football writers on Twitter, Karan and Raul. Who started by, you know, writing online, and they wanted to move to print. And so, you know, they've published their first book. They brought together a range of really good writers who brought their own perspectives on various aspects of Portuguese and Spanish football and collated their work into a book, Iberia Chronicles. And it was really good fun. You know, they gave us a lot of freedom to explore various different facets of Portuguese football. So the book has a great range of topics. There's going to be a lot of interesting bits for every reader, really. And it was really good fun. You know, I ended up writing about Braga, actually, and how they're closing the gap on the traditional big three. So, you know, quite topical after the summer they've had and how they ended the season and their ability to potentially sustain that challenge, first and foremost, over the last decade, but maybe in the future as well. So it was really fun to be able to kind of look back at their decade and maybe question whether they can keep it going, looking forwards.
You can buy your copy of the upcoming book, again, coming out on October the 5th. It will be available on Amazon, Hive, through pitchpublishing.co.uk. Anywhere you can find books around the world online, you can hopefully find Iberia Chronicles, A Brief History of Spanish and Portuguese Football. We'll throw the link to Pitch and anywhere on our social media to get this book out there to the viewing and reading public. Alex, I can't thank you enough again for joining us. I'm glad to see that your work is obviously being recognized in including you in a project like this. And if you guys have not been following Alex on social media, he does a great job. A very gifted writer and kind of gives the lay of the land of the league and the national team. And aren't we excited about talking about some national team news in the later part of this month and then early part of September with some actual matches, Alex? What do you think about
yes.
that?
Oh, I know. It's been too long, hasn't it? Too long without seeing our beloved Seleção in action. Yes, looking forward to that a lot. I'll have to come back and we can discuss it, you know, in more detail.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back. It's been a great experience for us, and we're so glad that we could finally connect and get you on the show. Again, Alex Gonçalves of TugaScout.com, TugaScoutPT on Twitter, and then you can follow him as well at Al Jeeves, A-L-J-E-E-V-E-S. Alex, all the best to you. Stay safe, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that, Danny.
And our thanks once again to Alex Gonçalves of TugaScout.com for helping us review the just-completed Liga NOS season. Please check out TugaScout.com for all of Alex's tremendous work, and make sure to follow both his and the Tuga Scout accounts on Twitter and let him know what a great job he did on the show. That will do it for this episode of the Seleção Podcast. We thank you once again for tuning in. As while it's been fun branching out a bit in regards to discussing the latest happenings of Liga NOS, while the Seleção has been on hiatus due to the pandemic, I am beyond excited to get back to talking about the Seleção, as I'm sure many of you guys are as well. The first match of the Nations League group play is set for just over a month from now. As of this recording, it's set for Saturday, September the 5th, as the reigning, defending, undisputed, and inaugural Nations League champions begin their quest to go back-to-back by hosting Croatia at the Estádio do Dragão in Porto It is where the inaugural Nations League campaign came to such a joyous and victorious end for the Slesson, so it's only fitting that the next campaign gets started from there as well. There is no date yet set for the roster announcement. It will happen sometime later this month in August, but as soon as we have that for you, we will make it available and share it with you guys on all of our social media platforms. Remember to download, listen, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever podcast platform you are using. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at SlessOnPod. Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/SlessOnPod. Reach us via email, SlessOnPod@gmail.com. You'll find us eventually on YouTube. Just search the SlessOn Podcast, and please check out our website, SlessOnPod.com. My name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of episode 32 of the Slesson Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. Thank you all for your continued support of the show. And as always, Força Portugal!